We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Welcome to the discussion hour of Nationwide on Radio Miraya with me, Gabriel Shadar. And today is May 16th, that is the SPLA day, and this is the day 39 years ago, a day where the South Sudanese decided to rebel against the government of the Sudan and also start the struggle, which culminated in the peace agreement in 2005, and also that peace agreement, which is called the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, led to the referendum in 2010, and also and then eventual secession and independence of South Sudan in July 2011. And so that this day has been declared to be a national day that is celebrating every year on the 16th of May. And this time it falls on this Monday. And also this day comes also 12 years of after independence of South Sudan. And of course, we would like to look into the legacy of this day and also looking back at what really happened during that time for those who have not read about it or those who have not witnessed it. And this is an opportunity to have a reflection about that and also see what has happened with the metamorphosis of the movement also and the changes in the movement into a political party that is ruling the country. And also, of course, we will touch on the situation of the veterans from that wartime and liberation and struggle time. With me in the studio is our guest, Honorable Atem Garang Dekwek, who is now the member of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, and who is also a veteran SPLM-SPLA member. And Atem Garang also is a long-serving member of parliament. And during the CPA, he was the deputy speaker of the national parliament that was in Khartoum until the time of independence. So the whole CPA period, he was there very actively. And also after independence, he was here also occupying very important positions in the parliament. And today is here after the signing of the revitalized agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan. He is still a member of parliament. Welcome, Honorable Atem Garang Dekwek.
Thank you so much,
Gabriel
Shadar, for this opportunity to share this day, the glory of this day with our people.
Yes. For the sake of those who do not know much about the historical conditions that led to the outbreak of the rebellion by South Sudanese soldiers, leading to the formation of the SPLA, SPLM. Please tell us the most important internal political conditions that were the driving force, driving power behind this.
Yeah, you know, in 1972, when the Addis Ababa Agreement was signed, South Sudan became an autonomous region. And from 1974 to 1980, the democracy experience by South Sudanese was so brilliant and so good, and that has created a feeling in Khartoum that it was endangering the rule, because there was a dictatorship in the north as well as in Egypt, therefore and even in Uganda. Therefore the region was not ready to accept a democratic system in a region which was not a country. Mm-hmm. So the Khartoum started to interfere in affairs of South Sudan, and also some of South Sudanese start to ally themselves with Khartoum. So from a regional autonomous rule, again it revert back to a centralized system where Khartoum has the upper hand in appointing who is going to be the head of the government of South Sudan. Mm. So that one actually created a feeling that the agreement of Addis Ababa is not well going as it was envisaged. Again, also, you know, when oil was discovered in Bentiu area in 1978, everybody was happy. But when the processes to for exploitation came in, it was said the refinery will be, all the process of the oil will be done in Coast Arabica and in Northern Sudan. This angered many Southern Sudanese. Again, also for this reason of oil in Bentiu, the North start also to change the borders of 1956, taking away some parts of South Sudan into the North Sudan. That also gave a feeling to South Sudanese that the North is trying to deprive them from their natural resource. Also, the digging of Jongole Canal was not welcomed by South Sudanese, and they dislike it because it was it is a colonial project mm-hmm. from 1904, while there were no single South Sudanese who was educated when they started it. So, plus other issues, mm-hmm. this actually brought young people together, that the system in South Sudan and in Sudan has to be changed. And therefore, and before that, in 1975, some soldiers of Anyanya rebelled in Nakobo, and then they formed what was known as Anyanya 2. The other aspect which I did not mention, you know, when the agreement was signed in 1972, there were some elements, politicians and soldiers of Anyanya, were not happy with the mm-hmm. way the agreement was agreed. Mm. So whether they were outside or they were inside, they were ready to join whoever is going to oppose the government of Sudan, and it's better to have an independent South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
So all these issues all together, they made
the dimensions, different dimensions.
Yeah,
that,
yes, all of them. They made the young people to join mm-hmm. The soldiers when they rebelled in took their guns against Khartoum, and then they joined them in mass.
Yeah, let's have a quick look also at the internal dynamics. You spoke about democracy in the South being very really vibrant at the time, but also the contradictory element of the discourse among the South Sudanese elites, which led to Nimeiri playing South Sudanese against one another. And these are symbolized by Abil Alier and Joseph Lago. And this also has played some direction, I mean some influence among the South Sudanese, which was exploited by Jafar Mohamed Nimeiri and abrogate the Addis Ababa Agreement. Please touch on that.
Yeah, yes. You know, South Sudanese at that time, the tribalism was not that much, because South Sudan was run based on merits and professionalism. Because the administrators of the nation were people who are specialists in their whole fields. But when they start to politicize some issues, then the North saw to it that this is the chance they have been waiting for. Because the Addis Ababa Agreement actually had united South Sudanese. And that unity of South Sudanese was not wanted by Khartoum. And South Sudanese, some of them, they wanted to be ministers. And you cannot have all of them to be ministers. And you have seen it even now. People fought, people died. Simply, some people, they wanted to be ministers or wanted to be generals in the army, while they have never gone to a course which will qualify them to become a general. So, South Sudanese themselves, they have a hand in that, because they were... first of all came regionalism before the tribalism.
Regionalism.
Upper Nile, mm-hmm. Equatoria, Bahr Ghazal, and when they were imagining about 12 or 10 ministers in Upper Nile, 10 ministers in Bahr Ghazal, 10 ministers in Equatoria, then you have 30 ministers. Then why should we be in Juba? But the dimension of the unity of the people, they don't look into it. And these were the Khartoum
exploited
properly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let us look also at the time when the South Sudanese rebelled against the government. There were also regional geopolitics, and we have even international geopolitics, in which, like, there is the Cold War going on, and any country who was supporting the Soviet Union, the neighbor is supporting, will be supporting United States. And that was the situation in which the South Sudanese found themselves. Ethiopia was a pro-Soviet and communist government bloc, which is a world bloc, and Khartoum was in the bed with the U.S. United States policy, which is also fighting. So there was much fighting over Africa, on the African continent, between the giants. Mm. So in this geopolitics, it was said that when there is a rebellion in another country, the other nation will be supporting it, and then you do a counter support of the counter revolution from the other country. How do you read into this?
Yeah, that's right. In our case, you know, the most significant support that could have an impact, and which later on have impact on our future, was Ethiopia. Ethiopia was having two issues. What you said as this Cold War between the capitalism and socialism. Ethiopia was a socialist country, though we signed the agreement in 1972 before the Ethiopia changed from the being supporters of the United States policies. Mm-hmm. Now, when the government was changed in Ethiopia, and a revolutionary young people came in, and then they were claiming being socialist, this made Khartoum to be a front, to be used by the West as
counter
capitalism. Mm-hmm. Socialism in Ethiopia. Mm. Number two was that Ethiopia have a feeling that the Arab world was supporting Eritreans to secede from Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. So they, and then South Sudanese, during the war from 1955 to 1972, they have been calling also for secession. So they felt that, okay, if this card is being used by the Arab world, which is making Sudan to be their representative in that war, then why not support if there is any rebellion in South Sudan? And so, but in case of Uganda, Kenya, those countries, they were a bit stable because they were all pro, even though Tanzania supported... It was a socialist country, even though supported the ousting of Idi Amin, but Uganda have not been that white and black as a socialist. But for Tanzania, was African socialism, which they were using. And then for us in South Sudan also, the government of Addis Ababa, I call it Addis Ababa agreement government, was a technocrat government.
Yeah.
Never had ideology. Yeah.
We never heard of...
So we didn't never have, we never been Westerners, we never have been Easterners, we are just people who like to make sure their education, their health care, all those services are well...
More regionally focused.
Exactly.
More regionally focused. Yeah.
So in case of quarreling over ideology, no, it was not there. But yes, even the elections when they were conducted in South Sudan, they were under the Sudanese Socialist Union, which was the one ruling party. But in South Sudan, we make our elections under the flag of Sudanese Socialist Union, but still we have our own parties. The SANU were there, the Southern Front were there, and socialists,
Liberal Party.
The socialists were there.
So
and then we were knowing who is this and who is that. So for us, ideologically, we were not white and black.
Thanks, Honorable. Thanks, Honorable. Listeners to Radio Mirai, this is me, Gabriel Shedda, with the Discussion Hour. And I have with me in the studio Honorable Tim Garang de Kweg, veteran of the SPLM, SPLA. And we are here commemorating the May 16th day. And we are talking here 39 years after the war broke out in 1983 on this day. In parts of the country. So let us move on, Honorable Tim Garang. And despite that there was no black and white, as you are saying, among the South Sudanese in terms of ideologies, but there seems to be a leaning, some sort of a variety in the thoughts of the South Sudanese, diverse political currents, if we can say. And this came together under the SPLA. And this seems to have made the merging of these different diverse groups to be a difficult birth.
Yes, let me start from the elections of 1978. When General Joseph Mbago was elected, most of the young people in South Sudan, they were so happy because they thought Joseph Mbago was representing the spirit of Anyanya, which was for secession of South Sudan from Sudan. The government of Abel was seen to be that not hostile to the, not really hostility, but not facing the North family. This is what people thought.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they voted for somebody who will say, okay, if you do this, we will not do this.
Yeah, championing their cause.
Yes.
Yeah.
But later on also, the government of Joseph Mbago, either from the North or from us, we South Sudanese, became also dysfunctional and it collapsed. And therefore, the hopes of young people also collapsed with it.
Mm-hmm.
So this caused people to be angry. And then join the SPLM when it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Now SPLM, when it made its manifesto, it has to be very clear, because otherwise we were operating in Ethiopia. If we were operating in Congo, it might have been, our manifesto could have been very different. Those they were our host. We did not have guns. They were ready to give us guns. So, and also some of the leaders, maybe John Garang, plus few, they were, as intellectuals, they were seeing that the West would not give them the, because...
For practical reasons. Yeah.
They fell even the African Union Charter. It was called African what?
Yeah. African Unity.
No.
the Organization of African Unity.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was also, would not... accept any cessation. So we have to make a socialist stand, even though some members within the SPLM were not ready to that, because they wanted us not to have an ideology. Because even Anyanya did not have an ideology, by the way. Their ideology was that we want to liberate some
nationalists.
Whoever will assist, welcome.
Yeah.
Whoever will have a good relation with them, they can benefit from our resources
and
in future.
Another level of diversity was in terms of the young officers.
Yes.
And the veterans who were already there before. So they found themselves in the same jungle. But people started to say, oh, who are the seniors here?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Those who were in Bill Farm, they were, most of them, they were former fighters of the Anyanya One. And they were having the same attitude of Anyanya One, that they want to fight for South Sudan, regardless of who is going to assist them. They do not know that if you say, I will sing your song and then you give me something, they do not know. So when the SPLM, when they start to sing the song, Ethiopian were singing. And we got support. But later on, SPLA abandoned the socialist ideology, because otherwise we could have implemented it now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, because the decisive movement also came when the SPLM, SPLA were chased out of Ethiopia after the change of the drug, and when Yeji came in, it was a total change.
Oh, well, you know, late Dr. John Garang was a good political player. He knows how to play his cards. He keeps some of his cards into his chest closely, and nobody will know exactly what is in his cards. So when things change in Ethiopia, he also tactically changed. Even though the SPLM was facing, the question of ideology did not become a big issue. The big issue was, how do we reunite again?
And survive.
Because in 1991, we split the movement, and it becomes a big issue. Our people were dying, killing themselves, and people were looking, how can we reunite? Because our unity will make us move ahead. So that was really priority one in the movement. Not ideology, whether we are Westerners. So if somebody could assist us with some guns to fight Khartoum around Juba, around Torita, around all the cities they were occupying, which actually they took from us in 1992, then let it be. There's, you know. So Dr. John Yele played well, and he went to the United States. And you know, the Americans, they have their belief. They think somebody who has been educated in the United States, they think he will be thinking or she will be thinking the way they train them. So we find ourselves, John Grant find himself, he was at home in the United States. Also, Ethiopians, when they saw Eritrea was going to go away, they wanted also to pay Sudan and the Arabs well with the same bitter coin.
Mm-hmm.
So they start to support us fully better than Mengistu.
Mm-hmm.
Even Eritrea.
Yeah, this is the geopolitics.
this is the geopolitics.
Yeah.
And I think they paid the Arab. Mm-hmm. We are here, Eritrea is there, and so...
So interesting interesting comparisons we are making here. And of course, we can't have this discussion without saying something about yourself. And mashallah, you still look strong. I don't know how old were you when you joined the SPLM, SPLA. And so tell us.
Well, I don't know what to say. Anyway, I finished my university in 1978. I joined the government of South Sudan, which was a very, very efficient government. I work as a local government officer, and I worked in Juko in 1980-81. And it was peaceful. And Nyanyatu was in Bill Farm, and they were not hostile to administration. They were just looking for the military positions. So, I mean, military, exactly, military camps where they can attack them all. Mm. Otherwise, we have been with the government, we were working, and we were asking ourselves, this type of regional government, is it going to be this way, where Khartoum can interfere, up to when? So we start to discuss this among us about as intellectuals, whether in Malakal, where our president was there, those of Rock Thornarok were there, Carpino were there in Malakal, late Francis Ngor was there in Malakal. So those late William Nguyen was there in Malakal. And many people will try to ask this question, will we be like this up to when? Especially when the war started in Bor in May 16, and then the mayor later on, after another 4 months or 3 months, divided the source into many regions. People start to say, oh, the thing has reached us. And this is why many people after that, in thousands, they went and joined. Might be Javan Emery did not divide South Sudan after the revolt in Bor. You never know. Might be few people could have
gone. Would have been different.
It could have been different, because people will see the unity of South Sudan as good, and let us go ahead with it. I was at that time in Malakal, and were transferred later on to area now it's called Twitch East. Twitch East is now in Jongle Estate. It was having a different administrative naming, and this is confusing. You will confuse many historians later on. Mm-hmm.
What was it called?
you know, before the during the British time, we were having provinces like Equatoria was called Equatoria Province, Upper Nile Province, Bahrgazal Province.
Mm.
Under them there were districts.
Mm.
So Bor was a district. But later on they were changed to be rural councils. Rural councils were the name given to the local government units. Now, when the mayor came in 1977, all districts, you take like A, was divided into many rural councils. You will have Kajukeji, you will have Morobo, you will have Lanya, and other areas. Now, A itself will be a rural council, but those small council, all they will have another name. We will call People's Area Council. Area Council means all those...
Yeah.
Rural council, they will report to Ye, and Ye after that will report to Juba.
Mm.
The same thing in Upper Nile, you will have both, we're having two rural councils, Bor Rural Council, and then Kongo Rural Council. Those two rural councils will come under Bor Area Council, who will be the one reporting to to Jonggule State, Jonggule Province.
Jonggule Province.
Yeah. So I was there, but when we joined the movement, we believe that it needs our energy, it needs our knowledge, it was for us to do that, because those of General Lagu and his colleagues, they have done their job, and therefore the next one was our job to do the right one, the right thing. And the SPLM, to me, it was a continuation of Torit uprising in 1955.
Yeah,
it was a continuation of that. That is the same spirit people are having.
But it looks like the movement from different directions of the country to join the SPLA-SPLM, it was not the name, of course, but it was just joining one another in a struggle. The name was not there yet, was not preconceived.
That's right.
It seems there is a movement, like a general consent, a general feeling, reading into the atmosphere and saying, oh, something is going to happen. And then you have this scene of people moving from far, from Awil, moving from Brumbek, moving from Yambio, moving from Meridi, moving, name it, a lot of, even from Juba. You were a government employee, and I think that job was very good. It was a very good job.
No, it was.
Some of you were members of parliament and all this, and you moved out.
Yeah, those of late Elijah Malok, those of late Jose Malat, they were members of parliament, but they have decided to join the movement.
And even those of Lawrence Walwal, from Bal Ghazal and others.
Lawrence Walwal, later on, but the most important thing is that, you know, young people from the universities, they join without completing their studies. Young people from secondary schools, many teachers, young teachers, and later on they were joined from rural areas by people from the rural areas. They might have different objectives, those from the rural areas. But for all these elites from the towns, they were actually for the cause of South Sudan. But some of the tribesmen, they thought they want guns and then they will come and solve some problems with their neighbors or within their units. But later on, the SPLM went and oriented them properly. They understood that all problems we have among ourselves are caused by mismanagement of our affairs by Khartoum. If we can have a government that is efficient and is good and can unite people of Sudan, then our problems also will not be there or will be a minimum. So therefore, let us fight the Khartoum government to bring a just government. And you will not fight among yourselves because of poverty, because of lack of water, all those things. Even though we did not achieve that now, that was the vision we had.
That brings me to the question, like, the SPLM has undergone a lot of trials and events. And, of course, do you think that all these things were avoidable, or it was something that was to happen, like any other movement in the world?
I think, to my thinking, could have been avoided. It's not a fate. I don't believe that. Because, you know, the human beings are the devil themselves. There is no devil. It is the way I think. If I think negatively, I have turned to the devil side. If I think positively and progressively, then I am a human being who believe in a better life for us.
In another way, we are saying we have to learn from what happened.
For sure. Yeah. We have to learn, but we did not learn. Because in 1983-84, we differ among ourselves in Bilfarm. And some great South Sudanese leaders died in the process of that disagreement. Among them is Samuel Guy Tut, and among them is Akwata Tim, and among them is William Adalashwal. They were nationalists. They are people who were brave, and their better committed to the case of South Sudan. But we lost them.
Then come another
decade. Again in 92, 91, again, we did not benefit from that, that when we split, we are going to lose a lot of things. So in 91, a massive atrocities happened among our own people. Then again, in 2013, we split again. The same as SPLM. It's not the malicious or whatever. Yeah. It is SPLM. And we fought among ourselves and our people in thousands and thousands.
The reasons might have been different, but the consequences are the same.
Yes. But but these are people who are members of SPLM. They don't have patience. They want to change things by violence. And then and those who are holding also the position, they don't want to listen to the others also. So you find those who are not being listened to, they will opt that, okay, if you don't listen to me, you will listen to my motors and my guns. And then when you listen to the music of their guns, then many people will die. And then after that, we come and sit on the table. Why not before that?
It's a big question. Listeners to Radio Brown, this is me, Gabriel Shadar, and with me in the studio is Honorable Atem Garang, the Quek, Member of Parliament in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, and who is also a veteran politician and veteran freedom fighter. He joined the movement in the early 1980s when the movement broke out and the fighting started on May 16th. Let us move now very big stride into the CPA period. And people wondered, like, fighting war for more than 20 years, and then a very brutal regime comes in with jihad and all these. The big paradox is that this dictatorship and all these wants to Islamize, Arabicize and Arabize and all these, would reach an agreement with Junubin. What was the incentive?
To me, the Muslim Brothers Brotherhood system in Sudan, in my thinking, they were having two issues. One of them is that South Sudan was a burden to the north, and they raised issues which can be believed by some of northern Sudanese, and that will be very destructive for them. Therefore, if those people can go, who are not wholly Muslims, maybe a fraction of them are Muslims, then they can go. And we will have a pure people who believe in Arabism and in Islam. I think this was one of their issues. Number two, the war, you know, it was so expensive. And we were very weak in 1992, 1993, 1994. But just like a surprise, in 1995, we start to capture areas. We swept across the country from Ye to Tony to Rumbek, and then they saw to it that, because in 1994, and later on, they refused to negotiate with us.
It was the IGAD initiative. It started 1994.
Yeah.
And then it was said Bashir accepted it, but said, no, I will suspend this. And he came back only 10 years later.
That's exactly.
2004. They say, oh, I'm ready now to talk.
That is exactly. It was when we came very strong, and we went up to Kassala. We were there. And Ethiopia...
You were almost going to Darfur.
Yes. There was a technical mistake somewhere where Bulat did not really succeed in going there properly. But what happened was that when we bring together our supporters from Eritrea and Ethiopia, while they are fighting there, in, I don't know, area called Bademi or something like that, and they will come and meet here in South Sudan and they will assist us. And they were people who have a better knowledge of the guerrilla warfare, even though we were having some over 10 years in the jungle. Now the Khartoum felt that if you capture the towns in South Sudan by force, possibly we are not going to remain in source. We'll go and chase them away in the north. So why not making an agreement with the South Sudanese and then push them away slowly through an agreement let them vote and then let them go and we will have a pure Arab country in the north.
Yeah, and there was also an element of geopolitics with the discussion with between Sudan and the United States in another level, because Sudan was under, the Islamist government was under sanctions. And it seems there was a carrot given to them that if you do this, we will leave, we will do something
for you. Yeah,
that's
right. No, yeah. Well, we were lucky. Mm. Sudan was using guns from West, from the United States and from Great Britain during the 1980s, 1990s, which we destroyed most of it. Challenger, Tang, and all the other guns.
Mm-hmm.
When two things happened, and it was just by luck. One of them was the they were trying to kill Mubarak in Addis Ababa.
Mm-hmm.
That angered Ethiopia, and we pray with God, thank you very much. Mubarak did not die, but it has caused a rift between Sudan and
Ethiopia.
And Ethiopia, that was one. Number two was the bombing of the twin
towers.
And then Bin Laden was in Sudan, and we said we are sorry for what happened.
2001.
We were sorry for what happened to the people in that tower, but politically, United States was mad, and they even tried to bomb other areas in Sudan because they were supporting terrorists. So that was for our interest, and this is why they have to come on the table.
Yeah,
and we said okay. Mm. And our negotiators actually they did well. They did well to negotiate a very good agreement with help from IGAD and from others. After that, also United States, they saw that we were strong, and we were going through without them. Then why don't join us? They join us, and then later on you hear the law which was done in the Congress, supporting Sudan peace and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is because, you know, we were strong.
Yeah.
If we were weak, I don't think somebody
even strong voices over the continent were not really pro-separation.
Yeah.
Everything was done. That is why there is a clause in the peace agreement that it was to be attractive unity.
Yeah, attractive
unity. Yeah, but the Sudanese, South Sudanese knew what they wanted.
Yeah, that's right.
That is
if you, suppose you, 1983, if you said in Ethiopia that I'm fighting to separate South Sudan,
nobody will support.
They will not support us.
Yeah.
But we say, but they were themselves. They were saying, if Eritrea is going to succeed, we will give South Sudanese the power to succeed.
Yes, we are left with like 10 minutes also to conclude. And this is a very interesting discussion in the studio here with me, Honorable Atem Garang de Koek, Member of Parliament, and also a veteran SPLM member, and we are discussing here on the May 16, which is a legacy, which is a history, which is something that we have to remember, but we have to read into the history coming to our present time. And now we have a peace agreement to be implemented. And as we have seen, every decade there is a conflict, a rift between among South Sudanese elites, and more divisions deepening year by year. Now, with this peace agreement, this is, I can say, the biggest accommodation that was ever done in the history of the Big Sudan or South Sudan. Big accommodation. You have never had a very vast, top-heavy government like this. And maybe we'll never have it again after elections. Yeah. So, but still, the legacy of the SPLM, SPLA still looms large. And it seems there are unresolved issues that South Sudanese must start looking at so that a window for a brighter future is opened.
Oh yes, Ustaz Shadar, you know, the government we have, of course, it was like a massage to a flaring egos of leaders in South Sudan. So you will have so many advisors, so many vice presidents, so many ministers, so many members of parliament, 550 with 100 in Council of State, that is 650 That is an army. This is not this army. So it is a massaging of flaring egos of leaders of South Sudan. And if it's going to bring peace, a permanent one, then that is welcomed. The peace agreement, you know why Addis Ababa peace agreement was successful? And even the CPA, why was successful? When the peace agreement was signed in 1972, the leaders of Sudan, leaders of the Anyanya, they joined their hands and they told all the towns in South Sudan. They visited them one by one, together. That will bring you peace. Let us look into the development of this country. Let us look into the life of the human being of this country. And the human being of this country is number one. It's the best and the strongest resource we have. And therefore, Addis Ababa was successfully implemented, though later on it was abrogated by Nimeiri, because Nimeiri also changed his ideology from a nationalist to an Islamist. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, come to the peace agreement, CPA. Dr. John tore all the South Sudan, which was under our control. And he was ready to go and tour North Sudan with Bashir and with others, even though he died. But in the source, he has visited many areas and he has been dancing with the people in those areas. And people listen to the leader. That now, to me, when the peace was signed in 2018,
yeah,
I thought President Salva, Dr. Riek, and others, they will join hands and then they will tour all the South Sudan.
The five signatories, yeah, five right. groups. Yeah.
They will go to the 10 states. And they will go even to the 79 counties. Let them visit.
What is the symbolism in that?
The symbolism is that the body language of the leaders coming together, talking one language, giving one message. And people who have killed themselves, people who have been displaced, people who are hungry. When you go together, seeing you together, talking together, coming in one plane, then people will say, okay, now there is a peace. But now being peace, there's some other areas are not accessible by a non-IO people, for example. Then how do you talk about
peace? Or a non-IG people.
Or a non-IG people.
or a non-SOA people.
then yeah. that's not it. But our hope, to me, this peace agreement, we should take it as a way forward. This is a roadmap for a stable South Sudan, and then for the coming elections, if they are going to come at all, then we will have a elected government, because the election of 2010 is now almost how many years? 12 years?
Yeah, 12 years.
It's too far away.
Yeah,
and we could have got two elections. Yes.
Yeah.
2015, 2020.
Yeah.
Now, we are going to have, the one is too late. But if it is there, and if it is fair and free, then what is wrong with that? But the difficulty is that, our people, do they have confidence to come back before the election to come and participate? Almost half of the country is outside. Half of the other quarter of it is within the displaced camps. Not in their original areas, but if they are in South Sudan, there is no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you are displaced to Juba, you can vote in Juba, there is no problem, you are South Sudanese. But those who are outside.
Yeah.
So, but those outside, to come back, is to make sure that there is stability. But you are seeing people are fighting among themselves. One tribe among itself, one tribe across other tribes, one community against the other community. And the government is unable to stop this. For the last
it's 11 years. It's a big challenge.
It's a big challenge. And then, and even when I visit my constituency, they will ask me, the British laws, where are they? Because during the, and I will say, why British laws? What about the Addis Ababa government, which was, even the SPLA, during the struggle? People moving on the countryside, you can move from Mangala to read on foot and nobody will disturb you.
Yeah, we have even people moving from far areas to the north on foot.
On foot without guns and nobody will disturb you. Even you will be hosted and given food.
Honorable Tim, The reading into history can provoke memories, and sometimes we can feel pessimistic, we can feel saddened and dark and all these kind of things. But let us end with a positive wish, if you have a message to send to the people, knowing that also you are sending it to yourselves as leaders.
No, that's right. My message is that let us have a peace in our hearts, and that peace will bring stability to this country. I want all of us to preach peace, a real peace, not a peace of tongue, a peace of behavior, peace, to make sure that, you know, if there is a problem among communities, if there is a third community to come in to make peace, that would be very helpful. And the chiefs used to do this. When there is a problem between Mangala and Magiri, the nearby ships will come in, that you stop this, and then they will have mechanism to stop that. It is the same spirit our people were having, is the one I want our leaders to have, starting from the leadership of the country, to the leadership of the parties, to the leadership of the church, the religious leaders also, and then to youth and women, because they are also very important, and then they are very effective in this society. This is what I can tell our people, that let us take peace as our program.
Honorable Tim Gerang de Kwek, thank you very much. We have learned a lot of things from your discussion with us. And for all those veterans who are still alive, congratulations, you made it up to today. And for those who have died, we pray for them also. And we pray for their families, that they will also have good treatment in the coming future and a brighter future, so that what they have done, what they have sacrificed, will not be in vain. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Ustaz Chadar, for this hosting me. And we are sorry that our bad friend, we did not take care of them. Mm. And I hope we will one day take care of those who are still alive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And that is the end of today's discussion on Nationwide Discussion Hour with me, Gabriel Chadar. All the best.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Miraya.
101 FM Radio Miraya, powered by the people, uniting the nation, your preferred station, the voice of peace. Radio Miraya, Radio Miraya.
Chopin by 12 gain ya, oh, you're my life.